I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smashbot.
Tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study, not to bring back, but to wipe them out.
That's the plan.
All right, people, on the ready line. Iron me!
Yeah!
Iron me!
Yeah!
Where are you? Get on the ready line, Marine! Get down to die! Get on the ready line!
Talk to me, Hudson!
I got signals. I got readings in front and behind.
There's nothing back here.
Look, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
Get them out of there!
They cut the power.
How could they cut the power, man? They're animals.
There's movement all over the place!
5 meters, man! 4!
Aliens. This time, it's war.
Hello, and welcome to Smashpot 3, the podcast that relights the fire of 80s action movies and celebrates the decade where the explosion was king. It was, wasn't it?
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yes, it was, yeah. This week, we'll be heading to space with a bunch of Marines to rescue a group of colonists from some deadly aliens. Spoiler alert, it doesn't go very well. And yes, we're talking about aliens. And joining me to crawl through a tiny tunnel, probably too small, in a really terrifying way, is writer extraordinaire, and I underline that word, Neil Forsyth, who can be found on Twitter as at Mr. Neil Forsyth. Hello, Neil.
Hello, thanks for having me, John.
Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a long time, so it's finally borne fruit.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure to come in under these circumstances.
I know, aliens.
Oh, fantastic.
I couldn't believe it when you picked it. No one had picked it.
Well, I didn't want to come in and slag anything off. I think that's the thing, where it's such a masterpiece that it was such a pleasure to watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question, though. Would this have worked, I mean, as an opening gambit question, if it was cannon and ball?
In terms of masterpiece, didn't want to slag anything off. Yeah, I think that would have worked.
If it was them going to space, or if they...
Or if it were them going to space.
Or indeed, Morecambe and Wise.
It took 9 years, for the aliens to come together, so I'm sure Cannonball was in there in some sort of
version. It must have been. I bet they passed on it and did Boys in Blue instead.
They're busy. They're busy men.
They were at this point.
Understandably so.
Because they could have had a bit where Tommy's all worried about the aliens getting through the tunnel and Bobby could have, you know, done the...
A bit of entendre about the tunnel as well. I think there's...
Yeah.
There's lots of fun. I mean, they'd have made something of it.
Because in many ways, they were our Abbott and Costello.
Our Ripley and Hicks.
Indeed. Anyway, so Aliens. Now, did you watch the normal cut or the director's cut?
I watched it on my laptop on the train, so I think it was HD. No, it was the normal cut, I think.
Yeah.
What's the big difference?
The big difference is in the director's cut, you see Newt's family in the colony finding the eggs.
Oh, really?
And getting attacked by a facehugger. So you see more of the colonists.
Can I ask you about the facehuggers?
Yeah.
What facehugger versus chest burster?
Yeah.
Yeah, what I mean, if you were to choose... How to go?
Well, one leads to the other, though, doesn't it?
Ah, facehugger's entry, chest versus exit.
Yeah, facehuggers go on you, and you go into a kind of comatose state while they lay their eggs in you, and then they drop off, and then you're fine. And then chest burster comes out after the egg's hatched.
So I've missed a fairly critical point of plot there, I'd
you
say.
Have. It's probably, you have.
I haven't hoped, no.
Yeah, well, you probably haven't seen Alien for a while. It explains it more in Alien.
Ah, okay, yeah, yeah. I hadn't seen Alien. I didn't rewatch Alien, unfortunately, but I did.
I accidentally did. I wouldn't have done, but I accidentally did.
Do you feel you need to watch that to properly enjoy Aliens?
No.
No.
No, but maybe if you watch the director's cut, because it also, it tells you about that, but it tells you a bit about how Ripley had a daughter, and when she gets back to Earth, she's been asleep for 57 years, and it tells you there's a whole scene about how her daughter's died. Because she got very old and died.
Ah, right.
So there's that whole theme running through the film about Ripley.
Yeah, absolutely. Not maternal having stuff and babies and the female.
And then the bloody alien has babies and she doesn't care about those, does she?
No, she certainly does not. I mean, that's horrific.
That is horrific.
I was thinking, what a lovely all-female scene we have here. And then it just turned into sort of girls' night out gone wrong.
That's right.
I think like all girls' night out, it started as good fun and then one of them flamethrowered the other one's eggs.
That's right. Maybe they should have done a carry on with this because you could Aliens or Girls Night Out Gone Wrong, written by Talbot Rothwell. but it starts off with Ripley asleep in space.
Yeah.
Because at the end of Alien, I don't know if you remember, but she gets rid of the alien.
Yes.
Because she's in the escape pod and she's blown up the ship thinking the alien was on there. But he snuck aboard the escape pod with her.
As they do, yeah.
So he should have had her previously on Alien. And she kicks the alien out of the airlock and then goes to sleep. And she's found 57 years later by Adam Klaus from Jonathan Creek.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Ah, a little glimpse.
Yeah. Didn't do any magic.
No, he didn't
have
any
ladies in his bed.
He's a very hedonistic magician, wasn't he? He's
very hedonistic.
Infamously so, I think.
Very. He famously let Jonathan do all the legwork.
Yeah.
Took all the credit.
He was a shaman.
Yes.
Is shaman the right word?
I think so.
Yeah.
But in the pilot episode of Jonathan Creek, he's played by Giles from Buffy.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Why do you think he's American? I don't see the...
I don't know, because in the pilot, it's Anthony Head, isn't it, is his name?
Yeah, yeah.
He plays it as an American as well.
Yeah.
But this guy's actually American, so maybe they just thought, meh.
Just sub it in, keep it simple.
Because this film, he's the first of examples of this. This film is littered with American actors who were living in London at the time.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting with the casting. He auditioned some like 3,000 British actors and then decided he needed to get Americans.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary, really. You'd think that some of them would have hit the... I don't think that's true, actually. I don't think it was about the quality of the acting. I think increasingly, if you read about it with Aliens, Cameron hated the fact he had to make this in Britain.
Yes.
The crew hated him.
Yeah.
He hated them.
Yeah.
And I think he became a bit of a... You know, I think he became slightly detestable of the whole British experience.
He didn't like the fact that there was tea breaks.
Tea breaks.
And part of going to the pub.
Tea breaks and going to the pub.
But he'd rather work 24 hours, whereas they were like 5 o'clock, we're all going to the pub.
Yeah, but he was from that American cycle where that's what they do, but then they all earn extortionate overtime, I think. So.
Yeah, well, he came from working for Corman, didn't he?
Yeah.
James Cameron, and an effects background. He did all the matte paintings in Escape from New York.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's his background. So he's used to grafting for 24 hours a day to get $30 for it or something. Whereas he's come to this, as you say, he didn't want to film it in England, came to England, and then there's this whole clash of culture.
Yeah, and they made fun of him because his wife was a producer. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Gail Ann Hurd.
Yeah. But he, and then he had to go and shoot an acting, which must have been bewildering.
Yeah.
But it was Terminator script that got him the gig.
Yeah.
Doing this.
That's right.
But what's interesting about that is he pretty much had the gig secured. And then he said, let me just have a little play with this. And he locked himself away for 4 days and wrote a 40-page mission statement, after which his involvement was on shaky ground. So he had it. He had it in the palm of his hands and wrote, I think, what sounds like some sort of Jerry Maguire outpouring. And then he had to win back their trust, I think, by writing at least half a script when Terminator was delayed or something.
That's right, yeah. He was waiting for the financing to come through for Terminator. This is before he was king of the world, everybody.
Yeah, well before.
Yeah, because he was mainly a screenwriter before this because he wrote Rambo First Blood Part 2 as well. But yeah, this was his big... Terminator and this were huge for him.
And it's brilliant. I mean, I think the thing with this is one of the things I found rewatching it is for what is very much an action film, there's lots of very wordy, theatrical scenes, two-handers and things that are just brilliantly written, obviously performed.
But a lot of heart as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real character-led.
It's to me, it's like a family drama with a massive Vietnam allegory.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a huge amount of Vietnam in this.
Yeah. You know,
going in all cocky.
All cocky, lots of elaborate handshakes and bullshit, just badinage.
Mm.
Constant badinage from the Marines.
Yeah, and then dealing with the natives who knew the ground better than them and were outwitted left, right and centre.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he said that as well. That was one of the things he was going for.
But she's been asleep for 57 years. She has a dream in Space Hospital where a chestburster comes out of her.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet Carter J. Burke. I like this guy. He's great.
Paul Reiser, yeah.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Paul Reiser is one of those people who used to be in everything. He was in Beverly Hills Cop.
I think it's worth pausing for a little moment on Paul Reiser.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to talk. I mean, Beverly Hills Cop, Curb, he was very funny in, Curb Your Enthusiasm,
yes,
in later years. But the thing about Paul Reiser I thought worth discussing is My Two Dads.
Mm-hmm.
My Two Dads. Did you ever watch that?
With Greg Evigan.
Yeah, so it's a late 80s thing. And I was thinking about this coming in and Paul Reiser and the My Two Dads connection. I thought, I'm pretty confident that the premise for My Two Dads is fucking insane.
It is.
I'll just give you a little summary of it.
If you
think this is of value.
Mm, I do.
My Two Dads. The series begins after Marcy Bradford, mother of 12-year-old Nicole Bradford, has died. Two men who had competed for Marcy's affections, and that's code for sex, had sex with her 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Michael Taylor, Paul Reiser, a successful financial advisor, and a struggling artist called Joey, were awarded joint custody of Nicole by Judge Margaret Wilbur. Now, you're probably thinking, John, why am I learning the name of the judge at this custody hearing? Well, hold tight. After giving custody of Nicole to Michael and Henry, Judge Margaret Wilbur frequently visits the new family, then buys the building and becomes their live-in landlord. The cast is rounded out by former football player Dick Butkus, who manages the cafe. However, the cafe is then taken over, you've guessed it, John, by Judge Margaret Wilbur, who renames it Judge's Court Cafe.
Amazing.
I mean, a couple of things. I'm no expert in legal ethics, but this judge's frantic attempts to involve herself in this fractured family is, at best, a little odd.
Yeah.
Secondly, just to clarify, a 12-year-old girl is now, whose mum's just died, is now living with two strange men purely because both of those men had sex with her mum over a decade ago and had not been seen since. That's the other thing. These are total strangers and awarded full custody. So I thought, well, that's a bit odd. Let's get into the episode descriptions and see if it kind of normal it up a bit.
I hope I'm imagining it does.
Unfortunately, it's quite the opposite. So they said that there was a recurring character, and I thought, well, maybe it's a social worker, you know, but it's not. It's a hunky rock star who's a friend of Joey's, regularly pops round and causes young Nicole to swoon. So, quick reminder, she's 12 years old.
12 years old, yeah.
So I looked at the rock star was played by Davy Jones of the Monkees, who was 42 years old at the time. So,
oh, Davy.
Apartment is a chamber of horrors.
It really is. This is awful.
That was a mainstream television sitcom. So,
who wrote it? Fucking,
I don't know. I mean, that
Sydney Cook.
He's a script consultant. I don't think
creative consultant, the Wolf Pack.
Absolutely. So there you go. That's fucking My Two Dads.
That'd be a better title. Fucking My Two Dads. Oh, that'd be awful. That's a terrible context. So Paul Reiser.
Paul Reiser.
He's brilliant in this.
Absolutely.
Because he primarily does comedy.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely brilliant in this. I like the way that in 57 years in the future, because Alien, I'm assuming, is in the future anyway, because they're travelling through space.
Yeah.
This is 57 years plus to Alien's future.
Yeah.
The biggest evolution that's taken place, the suits have got a pull-up collar.
Little wingtips, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's suave.
But wingtips must have existed when the film was made.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, a cynical person would think that.
Sorry.
But she has to have a meeting with the board.
She does. It doesn't go well.
No, it doesn't, because they kind of blame her. They don't believe her about this xenomorph. Also, after being asleep for 57 years, my first question would be, how is the Marvel Universe progressing? What would you ask after 57 years?
Oh, God. Well, she doesn't ask about any family or friends. Or...
Well, in the cut, we find out about her daughter, but yeah.
Oh, so they've stitched her right up with that cut.
They have.
Like a heartless piece of work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got the builders in just now. I think I'd just ask if they've wrapped up. Yeah.
Probably not.
No, I'd be surprised.
Maybe EastEnders is still going.
I just assume it was.
Yeah.
Does it have a Scottish alcoholic in it?
They always do, don't they?
Yeah.
Who's the best Scotsman who's been in EastEnders? Is it the guy who beat up Little Mo?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not pin blame.
No.
That was one round of a long battle.
That's true. Mary the Punk was a Scot, wasn't she?
Oh, yes. Of course she was, yeah. Who was the other one? There was someone who drifted in and had various, quite serious character and lifestyle flaws. And then
Dirty Dougal.
Dirty Dougal.
Anyway, yeah, so they're very unhappy with her because the mothership blew up. But so as kind of a punishment, she has to live in the flats from Only Fools and Horses from the future and work at the docks, basically, loading stuff.
Mm. Looks like a caravan, doesn't it, her apartment? I thought,
does
the
bit.
The layout of it.
Yeah, but they've made it like kind of if IKEA made a slum.
Yes, but you know, there was something about the toilet was actually the toilet from a BA plane or something.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah, there's lots of stuff out of that they've made and mended in this film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The car they use later on, like the people carrier car. Uh-huh. That's a thing that they use to push airplanes along at airports, which they've dolled up to look like a futuristic space car. Anyway, so Burke comes to see her with Lieutenant Gorman. And tells her that they're, because she, oh, this is something in the meeting. She says, look, there's this alien there. You might want to look into it. And they said, well, you know, we've got a colony there.
Yeah.
And they've been there for 20 years. They've not heard anything.
Yeah.
And she's livid at that idea.
She's absolutely furious.
Yeah.
And understandably so. But I think, yeah. And I think the great thing with Burke, I thought it was, a fantastic performance by Reiser. Just a brilliant, understated, dramatic performance. But I thought the character, it's quite quaint. The way the 80s films always had this bad capitalist.
Yes.
But it was an individual.
Mm.
It was this sort of, it was always represented in this quite interesting, colourful individual with this and Gecko and people like that. Whereas now, I don't know who that would be. It would be a sort of faceless corporation.
It would be a faceless corporation, yeah. But it does tie in nicely with Alien as well, because the whole theme of Alien is that they're sent to this planet to investigate by the company with the proviso of bringing one of the xenomorphs back with them.
And if you look at space travel now, there is this very odd grey area role of private companies and things.
Well, Virgin are going to space, aren't they? Knowing Branson, though, that's going to end in complete disaster.
Yeah, they've been meaning to go for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, and didn't one of the pilots testing it get killed? Yeah. It's like when he used to have his hot air balloons, they'd always crash. And he should stop doing that.
Let's wrap it up. I think he's 70 now as well.
He's got his own island.
Nice gaff, yeah.
Yeah.
And enjoy it.
But I did hear that the Virgin Atlantic first, the Virgin test flight of it, that Bob Geldof bought a ticket. So,
oh really?
Maybe hurry up.
I can possibly. I wrote something with Bob Geldof in it, and he's read his autobiography, and it's I read his autobiography and Midge's autobiography, and that relationship is fantastic. It's just so rich.
Yeah, they don't get on now, do they?
No, they don't get on.
Is that because of the Band-Aid song or the experience itself?
I think Midge felt he was slightly sidelined.
He was.
But he has a lot of little digs at Geldof in his book. And my favourite one was accusing Geldof of being incapable of landing on the beat, which is Rockstar 1-on-1, of course.
Yeah.
And he just thinks Bob can't do it. And I do think of all the little barbs he had through the book, that's probably the one that Geldof is carrying about to this day, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Geldof's had a lot to deal with in his life, though, hasn't he?
He has.
Yeah, not been very nice. He's not in Aliens, though.
He's not in Aliens. Not in any of them. There's been eight.
Eight Aliens films?
Yeah.
Or Alien films.
How many have you watched, would you say?
I've probably seen all of them.
Really?
Yeah. I've even seen the AVP disasters.
Is it Diminishing Returns?
Yeah. I'd say Aliens is a masterpiece. This is really good. Three is good if you watch the director's cut. Four's terrible, absolutely awful. And then you get the AVP films, which are pretty poor. And then Prometheus has interesting ideas, but is executed very badly. And Covenant is appalling. IMO.
And you've just stuck with him.
Yeah. I'm always interested. I find the beast, as H.R. Giger would call it, fascinating.
Right.
The giant penis monster. Which in this film is one thing I don't like about this film, is they've redesigned them to look like ants. Because yeah, they're trying to suggest that they're a colony of ants, essentially.
Oh, right.
And I don't like the way they look in these. Yeah. They've taken away the big glass dome and put in loads of black on it, so it looks like an ant.
Quite leggy.
Yeah, and they're very generic. Whereas the thing about the alien in the first film was that it's very distinctive and terrifying.
That's true. I think the only distinction with the queen's just massive. It's just a bigger version of...
I like the design of the queen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still quite leggy, though. It's all arms and legs. That one's
not an attractive way.
Not an attractive way.
It's just you keep saying leggy in that.
Would you...
You're perspiring. keep saying leggy. I just...
Yeah. Not in a Rod Stewart sense. Would you, right, I'll ask you a question. Would you, if someone said to you, the whole fate of the human race depends on this, right, and only you can do it, would you have sex with the Queen Alien if it meant that it would save the human race?
Would it be filmed?
No.
Oh, no, I'm not interested then. No, thank you. Do my business in public.
Well, that's good to know. Thanks. Well, you are a writer, so it's about time you got out on the, you know, you weren't one of the backroom boys.
I think that's one of the videos, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So where were we? Yes, so Burke and Gorman arrive, and they say to her, look, we've lost contact with the colony. We can't get in touch with them. Again, in the director's cut, you see why, because they finally come across the spaceship from Alien and found the eggs. And he says, look, we need you to go out there because you've got the experience. She says no. And he says, well, if you come with, we'll reinstate you. We'll stop you working in the dock. We'll get you recommissioned.
What would you say if I told you I could get you reinstated as a flight officer? The company has already agreed to pick up your contract.
If I go.
Yeah, if you go. Come on, that's a second chance, kiddo. And I think personally for you, it would be the best thing in the world to get out there and face this thing. Get back on the horse.
Spare me, Burke. I've had my psych evaluation this month.
Yeah, I know. I've read it. You wake up every night, your sheets are soaking with sweat.
I said no, and I mean it.
Bigger gaff, you'll be out the caravan.
Yeah, and you can go and live somewhere else. And at first she says no. And this is the really weird bit that I didn't like, is she says, you know, I've had my psych evaluation, thanks, Burke. And he goes, yeah, I know, you've read it. You wake up sweating. Mm. Like, that's a bit personal.
Yeah.
I'm going to that. Anyway, she tells him to leave. Then she has another bad dream.
Yeah, the thing, I mean, never make a decision directly after a nightmare.
No.
Because it's not going to be good. It's going to be slightly deranged.
But yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit handy, I suppose. But there was such a lovely scene, the two of them, beforehand, when he was trying to persuade her. And it was about 3 or 4 minutes or something. You know?
Yeah.
I just didn't feel it. It was just, it's a lovely flow to that. To Cameron's writing, I thought, in this film throughout. But yeah, it was a little bit handy that was the extra push, that she had this nightmare, and then she phoned them up and said, well, will we as long as we off them,
yeah,
I'm in.
She says, we're not bringing them back, we're going to wipe them out. And he says, absolutely. But spoiler alert, he's
up to something. He's up to something.
Hello, Ripley, you okay?
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study, not to bring back, but to wipe them out.
That's the plan. You have my word on it.
All right, I'm in.
But I liked his space business card. He gives her a sheet of plastic with see-through.
Yeah.
Which she then uses to phone him, which is a video phone that wakes him up.
Yeah.
And that's impractical, a video phone like that, where you can just phone someone and immediately see them.
Having used their business cards.
Yeah. I mean, they've brought in video phones now, but you have to have the permission of someone to see them. Yeah. Whereas he answers and you can see him basically in the nude.
Yeah.
That would be awful.
He's sort of coquettishly leaning in, but he's looking good. I mean, he's woken up and he's he's just on it.
He's wiping sleep out of his eyes. But he's also, as you say, looking over his shoulder so we can't see who's in bed with him.
Might be
an alien.
An alien, I was thinking. Yeah. A baby alien.
A baby alien. Oh, God. Is this written by Sidney Cook? So next we see them. Oh, she tells Jones the cat from Alien that he's going to stay at home.
Yeah.
Who will look after Jones the cat?
I don't think we care.
No.
Not at this stage.
Maybe it's a hotel for cats.
I just honestly don't care.
They're going to write a prequel now, you know that.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of colour. I don't think they needed the cat, but...
Well, they had to, because she was asleep with the cat.
Oh, that's true.
At the end of Alien, they had to put it in.
Yeah, that's true.
Although they could have had it that they woke her up and the cat was like frozen stiff and dead.
It's an old cat now. That would now be the oldest cat. No one's give the cat much recognition that it's now the oldest cat in the world.
That's very true. Yeah. The Guinness Book of Records would have come round. And especially if Jones would have had a big, long grey beard from being asleep so long, like Rip Van Winkle.
Would have made sense. Yeah, it would have made sense.
Like the last days of Howard Hughes. I was going to say Howard Hawks, and then it turned into, it was Howard Hughes. Yeah, but not Hook.
That's from Zulu.
Yeah. So they all wake up in space, and she's now with the Colonial Marines.
All right, sweetheart, so what are you waiting for? Breakfast in bed? Another glorious day in the Corps. Day in the Marine Corps is like a day on the farm. Every meal's a banquet. Every paycheck a fortune. Every formation a parade. I love the Corps.
Man, this floor is freezing.
What do you want me to do, fetch your slippers for you?
Gee, would you, sir? I'd like that.
Look into my eye.
What a bunch of bellends. It's just, it's high fives and badinage. And they're just so annoying. But you know that the vast majority are going to die.
Yeah.
And there's a point to it there. And I think that's his Vietnam stuff as well.
Yes.
Cockiness.
Also, Bill Paxton elevates any film he's in by about 300%.
Oh, extraordinary. And you know, a lot of it was ad-libbed, I was reading. A lot of his famous Paxton lines in this film, like, game over, man, game over. It was all ad-libbed.
He's so fucking good.
I mean, he's a great actor. His character is an appalling soldier.
Yes.
I mean, whenever there's a call for any soldiery, he not only refuses to do it, he angrily refuses to do it. I mean, it's literally his job.
He's very scared.
Yeah, he's very scared. There's a great scene later where I think she suggests just basic soldiery, you know, seal the exits. And he said, count me out. He's getting paid a salary.
He's a bit like Hook from Zulu.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah. There's some lovely introductions here, even though some of it's a bit too on the nose about macho, the 80s macho scene of Vasquez and her friend doing the chin-ups.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Saying, you're a badass.
And then there's an odd thing with them where when he dies, she looks like forlorn, like this could have been the one. And their entire communication before that has been sort of aggressive banter, misogynistic from his end.
I always assumed they were a couple.
Oh, beforehand?
Yeah.
And this was just how they communicated, which
I think so. It's Reaganomics.
And then Bishop comes in.
Yes. It's good to see a Bishop.
Always good to see a Bishop. And obviously, he cut his finger.
Yeah, and then Ripley freaks out. She does the knife trick first, though, that every kid in school did.
Yeah.
With a pencil.
Yeah.
You'd hold your hand over another kid and do the pencil trick.
How did you get on with that?
Not very good. My brother used to force me to do it, so I'd have to hold my hand there, and he'd always get me with a pencil. Oh. Or spend my youth with bits of pen and pencil on my fingers. But yeah, he does that, and he cuts his finger, and Ripley freaks out because in Alien, you may remember, the robot on board there freaks out Ian Holm. He doesn't freak out Ian Holm, he is Ian Holm, and tries to kill her with a rolled-up newspaper.
Yeah, a furious paperboy.
furious from the game Paperboy. Yeah. That's the end-of-level boss in Paperboy.
But she immediately hates Bishop the android,
because
she once met another android she didn't like. I mean, it's a stunningly racist touch.
Mm-hmm.
She hates all androids. And she won't give any of them a time of day.
He should have said in robot speak, hashtag not all androids.
Yeah. She's like a member of the Football Lads Anti-Android Alliance.
Yeah. They just want their country back. That's all.
Happen if you got a comedian in a room, you open their Amazon account and you look back at everything they've ever bought on that website. Well, this.
Because I was consuming so much peanut butter, I decided to try and get a powdered version that wasn't as fattening.
Your handwriting can change your life.
I regret this book. I regret this book.
Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that. I do have that on my fridge.
£4 you spent on that.
That's My Mate Bought a Toaster, available now from Great Big Al.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, she hates Bishop and then does a briefing to the soldiers who are still very cocky.
They just want sharp and they're chipping in and hands up for silly questions.
Yeah. And she, you know, she says to them, just one of those things wiped out our entire crew.
Yeah.
And there's potentially thousands where we're going.
Yeah.
And she's right to be worried about it.
She's worried for them.
Yeah.
And they still won't listen.
They're complete dicks.
They're fanning about and then they go down and the journey down's tough. I thought it was felt quite long, the journey down, I thought, watching it again.
I was just going to say, if we could go back a second, there's some lovely exposition here, some nice writing.
Yes, we're planting the, what's it called?
The loader.
The loader.
And as she walks past, you blink and you miss it, she overhears someone talking about how you open the air dock.
Oh,
and the airlock.
Wow.
It's such a beautiful
and
moment.
The flamethrower as well. I think we've got just enough for... So all those three things are planted there, yeah.
Just completely blink and you'll miss some moments. It's just brilliant writing. But yeah, we then have the elevator. They go in the pipe to get down to the planet. Now, the pipe bit, I don't know if you remember, but there was a video game of aliens in the 80s. There were two video games. One where you just shoot aliens. And then there was another one which was kind of an adventure game. I may be wrong, correct me, everybody. But there was a level that was fucking impossible where there was literally a pipe going down to the planet, and you were the spaceship, and you had to stay within it, otherwise you would fail. And it was so hard. That's all I ever think about when I think of this moment.
Yeah, but not the tight pipe that comes later.
No.
That's a whole new
it's not really a pipe. The pilot says, we're in the pipe.
Yeah.
And they fly down to the planet, but on her scanner,
there's
a digital pipe they're flying through.
Right.
I guess to avoid turbulence or something. Yeah. But yeah, oh God, that was so hard. But they land on the planet, and then we see how cool Michael Biehn's character Hicks is, because he falls asleep during the drop.
Yes.
With the horrendous turbulence, because you get that lovely line from A. Pone saying, you know, get yourself ready, get your arm, blah, 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 and somebody wake up Hicks.
Yeah.
We got tactical smart missiles, base plasma pulse rifles, RPGs, we got sonic electronic ball breakers, we got nukes, we got knives, sharp sticks.
Knock it off, Hudson. All right, gear up. 2 minutes, people. Get hot.
Somebody wake up Hicks.
Just brilliant.
Yeah, and he only got the part a week before the... week before it, because what's-his-chops, Remmer...
James Remar.
...got kicked off, and they said it was creative differences, and it turned out to be drugs possession.
It was drugs, yeah. He was...
You can see his back in a couple of scenes.
Yes.
They'd already shot a couple of wide shots and things, and...
And the funny thing is that the nice, it was one of those, sometimes they do it in films where they build like a mini platoon of actors and they treat them like they are soldiers. And they said to them, right, well, you are your characters. It's up to you what your characters are like. Take away all this equipment and costume and customize it as to what your character would like to be.
That's right. And they all wrote
so they've all written their own messages. Like they did, I think they did that in Full Metal Jacket as well. But Michael Biehn is wearing James Remar's costume.
Right.
So all the stuff written on there, he hasn't written. And I think he said that it didn't quite fit him in places as well. But I think he does an incredible job in this. He's always good, but in this he's just outstanding. Yeah. And he's got the real heart of the film.
And it's a slow build as well.
Yeah.
I think that there's a couple of things that I thought were so good about it that I thought, I wondered if they'd get away with that now. One of them is the pace of it.
Mm.
You know, I just feel that if that film was made now, they'd chop half an hour out of it and it would be pacier and quicker and there'd be some of these slower burn moments just wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And then I thought as well with Ripley, a lot of times she's one step back from the action.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant because it just lets you, you know she's the star of it and you're interested in her observation of it, but it's so clever and subtle that she'll be literally observing through whatever means of some of the action. Or it takes her a long time to take charge.
Yeah.
And arguably she never does officially take charge.
Not until the very end. No,
because after Gorman sort of cacks it, it's Hicks. She makes the point, Ripley, of saying, well, Hicks is next in line to officially be in charge. And he sort of grows into the role almost with her support.
Yeah.
And then she takes charge at the very end of you know, finding Newt. So, again, such brave choices.
And good writing.
Great writing. And very significant, I think, that it never got shown to test audiences because the edit wasn't ready.
That's right.
And that's probably the kind of simplistic thing that panicked execs would take out of a test screening. So, it's just fantastic.
Also, I was saying to my wife when we were watching this the other night, it's funny that this doesn't get picked. This doesn't get mentioned by those whiny incels who get upset about Star Wars being women, you know, a woman being in charge of the hero in Star Wars, Captain Marvel being about a woman. They instantly dismiss it. This is about a strong woman.
Yeah, very much so.
And it never gets mentioned because it's, I guess, because it's so varied in its cast.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this is about a woman, just like Alien is and just like Alien 3 is. But people like, they have such affection for it, it doesn't get mentioned.
I think she probably presents as slightly androgynous, maybe. I mean, I don't know if that's... Well, they see what they want to see, maybe, some of these people.
Yeah.
But it's all about motherhood and reproduction, and it's hugely about, you know, her relationship with Newt and stuff. That's so beyond an adult trying to look after a child.
Yes.
It's really...
Particularly with the director's cut, a moment of finding her daughter's dead. You've got this replacement daughter there.
Why that left the original?
I think it was just so bad, so long.
Right.
That they wanted to chop out any other bits. But when he, significantly, when he re-released it into video in the 90s, he then re-released it as the director's cut.
Right.
You also get a scene with the... you know the bit where they're going through the ammo after the crash, which we'll get to in a bit. They have a box of sentry guns, which they set up in a tunnel. That's quite a nice scene. Mm-hmm. You get to see, it's a bit like Zulu, you get to see the counter of the guns firing.
Yeah, and it tells
you how many aliens are in there. It's quite terrifying. Anyway, so they land on the planet and they go inside the colony facilities.
And it's brilliantly shot. It's amazing, that arrival.
Yeah.
And going inside, I thought the use of sound, particularly silence, actually, is just so spooky and immersive.
And James, we should mention James Horner's score in this. Yes, incredible. Exactly.
And he had a tough time doing it, didn't he?
I think he had like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. Particularly this scene, as you say, when they're wandering through the facility, he just drops in these little echoey thuds. Just the ambience. And it's just... really racks up the tension.
And everything clanging off the steel, you know, that steel floor he played with throughout. Which I think
and
he got from a local company or something.
That's right.
They had it out the back of a warehouse.
Yeah, and he got a lot. The producer's literally on his shoulders the whole time. He didn't have a nice time doing this at all. And again, he didn't want to go to London to do it, but he was forced to.
Yeah.
And his music at the end with the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it got used in trailers for about 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if he gets paid for that.
I hope so. He's dead now, sadly. Oh. Died a couple of years ago. He was one of my favourite composers, but there we go. So they go through the colony and we start seeing the signs of the aliens. There's barricades, there's acid burns on all the floors, which they point out to Ripley. Interesting, they're in the future, but they're still shooting on video.
Yeah.
then they come across loads of face huggers in jars.
Mm.
Which is quite a horrific scene.
Yeah.
Two of them are still alive, the others are still dead. And there's one of them, which, I mean, my brain being the idiot brain it is, one of them is much bigger than the others. So I'm thinking, I wonder if that's the Queen.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
All felt a bit Joseph Merrick, all that stuff, didn't it?
So did. They return to that in Alien 4, where Ripley is cloned. Oh, and they find a lab full of Ripley rejects.
It's not good. A bit kicking the arse out of it.
It really has. It's horrible. Really horrible. Don't ever watch it. And then something pops up on the motion trackers, which is again sound design. That tracker's like the dunk, dunk, dunk. It's beautiful.
I think we got some here.
Behind us.
One of us?
Hey, Pawn, where are your people? Anybody in D Block?
Oh, that's a negative. We're all in operations.
Talk to me, Frosty.
Let's keep moving, baby.
And this is where they find Newt.
Newt's Cady Hearn.
Which could, on paper, be an irritating character.
Yeah.
If someone said to you, by the way, there's an Alien sequel with a little kid in it, you'd be like, oh no, short round.
Yeah.
But she's brilliant.
She's fantastic.
Mm.
And a really interesting story. They searched and searched and searched. And what I found funny was they looked at loads of American-based kids, but they were all the ones that were doing adverts.
Yeah.
And they were trained to smile at the end of each line.
That's right, yeah.
So they did all these audition tapes where this deeply grim dialogue, and then the child would do a perky smile at the end of the line. My mum died, and then it was this thing. So, and then they found her. She was living in the UK, American-born, and actually her accent does veer about a bit.
It does.
There's a couple of lines. I think the last line, actually, of the whole show, she sounds like kind of posh English.
Yeah. But
she was technically American-born, living in the UK, and then never worked again.
No.
Sort of Sonny Pike.
Yeah.
Of the acting game, Freddie Adu. And she's just sort of had this... Yeah, she went off to be a teacher, didn't she?
I believe so. I think she still goes to all the conventions and stuff, so she probably makes a few quid out of it. But yeah, and looks a bit like Kurt Cobain. That's all I could see. In my mind, they found Kurt Cobain, because she's got the little ratty cardigan on,
yeah,
the dirty blonde hair.
And her bedroom probably is similar.
Imagine the stink in there.
I know.
Because you wouldn't go out of there to do it.
One thing I did find a bit odd with her, she'd lived there. How long has she been on her own on there?
Didn't they say they'd lost touch with the colony a few weeks ago or something?
Okay, so she'd been on her own for about a month.
Yeah.
In that really creepy environment.
Ugh.
So alien stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
And she'd just gone with it, and she'd had a little pad there and stuff. But then in this film, she then screams at everything.
Mm-hmm.
She's terrified by... by anything. And you think, well, in that month, she's obviously buckled down.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was a flaw, but...
No. But again, it's another example, though, of going back to the fact that she's been living in that tiny hole of, you know, say, don't show. Because your imagination then goes to, wow, that must have been... Yeah, at exactly. Nighttime, she's probably seeing them all or hearing them all running around.
Yeah. No, that
must have been terrifying.
Another great bit of set design as well.
Yes. As they take her back, the Marines carry on deeper into the facility, because Hudson has found, because all the colonists have got chips inside them, not McCain, and they're all hiding under a cooling tower.
Yeah.
So they go and investigate that, the Marines. And this was filmed at Acton Power Works.
Was this, and when he spotted it on the grid, is this when he said, stop your grinning and grab your linen?
Stop your grinning, drop your linen.
And is that a phrase?
I don't know. It might be another Paxton improv.
Well, I think it was in the script, but I couldn't find it. I thought, and I just got a horrible feeling that that's Cameron's idea of what a ladies man might say.
I think it probably is.
Which makes it a little bit heartbreaking, really.
Yo! Stop your grinning and drop your linen. Found them.
They alive?
Unknown. Looks like all of them over at the processing station, sublevel 3, under the main cooling towers.
Looks like a goddamn town meeting.
Well, we know Cameron's a ladies' man, don't we?
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know if he would have been as a child.
No, true.
I feel that's maybe something he heard one of the bigger boys say at school, and he's stayed in his head, and he's got it out here. But that was a strange dialogue twist.
Mm. But it's one of the lines that everyone quotes from this film, though.
Yeah.
Because he has a few of them. But yeah, they go to Acton Power Works, where they film the same... They use the Acton Power Works to film the Axis Chemical scenes from Batman.
Yes.
Which I think's gone now. I think they demolished it, because it was disused.
They had to get removed the asbestos, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. And you also get Hudson doing the line about, it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy.
Nobody touch nothing.
Busy little creatures, huh?
Hot as hell in here.
Yeah, man, but it's a dry heat.
Knock it off, Hudson.
But they go in there, and as they walk in, Ripley suddenly says, hang on, aren't those cooling towers basically massive atomic bombs? And then they have to stop, take all their weapons away from them.
Yeah. I like that plant bit. As well.
So that's when Frost says, what are we going to use, man? Harsh language. And then they go in there and they do find loads of dead colonists in cocoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the chest burster. First chest. Well, apart from her dream sequence.
Yeah.
On top, the first chest burster.
Which of
heroic death, a chest burst, isn't it? You can arch the back and look good.
Yeah. John Hurt looked good when he had it. Yeah,
magnificent, I thought.
Yeah.
Supple.
But obviously, all hell breaks loose at this point. We've got hundreds of aliens attacking everybody.
Yes, but it's such a pleasure to start killing some of the Marines. I think that's the thing. You really are ready for some of them to go at this point.
Yeah.
You know, arguably, your loyalties are slightly split in this battle scene. By design, I think, as well.
And some of the soldiers have got excellent names. Like, where's Bowski?
Spunkmeyer.
Spunkmeyer's a good one. Where's Bowski? But this was the first time that they'd used this technique, which they've copied in so many films since, where you've got a commanding officer watching the screens of all the soldiers and their vital signs underneath. I can't name how many films have copied that since.
Oh, really?
Yeah, loads. I think Jurassic World did it.
Do you think that existed in terms of military apparatus at that point?
I don't know, because I'm assuming they had video cameras in their helmets, and what we're probably not seeing is to make that work, because I'm assuming they used them practically. Massive. There's probably loads of cables going down their back and massive power packs and stuff. Now they just use GoPro cameras. In fact, I think in Alien Covenant, they've all got GoPro cameras on.
You buy it.
Yeah, Yeah, and it works so well, particularly adds to the tension and the chaos of what's going on at this moment, because you can't see what the hell's going on.
Gorman shakes himself.
He's crap. Because we find out during their drop that this is his second drop ever.
Second ever drop.
So he's inexperienced. That's his thing that's going on throughout this film. Yeah. Basically, loads of people get wiped out. Ripley takes over and drives the truck I mentioned earlier.
To a degree. The thing is, she still makes that Hicks point about chain of command, doesn't she? But then she jumps in there.
Well, that's after Gorman gets knocked out.
That's right,
Because she takes over, she drives the truck in and something falls off a shelf and knocks Gorman out.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's the sequence.
Yeah, and this is like the last chopper out of Saigon, this bit, because she drives it in, opens the door, everybody gets in, but obviously most of them are dead. And then Vasquez's fella buys it.
Yeah.
Gets acid in the face.
She's sad about that.
Yeah.
She won't get any more aggressive misogyny from her potential husband.
They get out of the compound, and then Ripley has that wonderful line of they're talking about what they're going to do next, and she says, I say we just get on a ship, get out of here, and nuke the site from orbit. And then this is when Burke starts showing Burke's true colours, because he says, hang on, this is a multi-million dollar compound, you know.
Yeah.
And she says, they can bill me.
Well, I believe Corporal Hicks has authority here.
Corporal Hicks is?
This operation is under military jurisdiction, and Hicks is next in chain of command. Am I right, Corporal?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Look, Ripley, this is a multi-million dollar installation, okay? He can't make that kind of decision. He's just a grunt. No offense.
None taken. Pharaoh, do you copy?
Standing by.
Prep for dust off. We're going to need immediate evac.
Roger. On our way.
I say we take off, nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. Let's do it.
Spunkmeyer. It'd be better if it would have been Scotty Trotter and a spunk-powered moped. You know that? Viz strip.
I do know. It is my favourite Viz strip of all time.
One of my favourites.
It's Mickey's Monkey Spunk Powered Moped.
Is it Mickey's Monkey?
Yeah. Because at the end, he gets himself a, is it a fanny battered powered milk float or something?
Yeah.
It is my favourite of all time. I think it's Graham Drury did it.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh,
it's just I remember getting that copy of Viz. I remember going to the bus to college when it came out.
Yeah.
I remember crying, laughing. I remember taking it into college and just literally going around everybody and saying, read this.
That was brilliant. Me and my pal Dominic had exactly the same at Dundee High School, passing that back and forth. And I think it was that Christmas, actually. I persuaded my granny to buy me the big pink hard one?
Big pink stiff one.
Yeah. I usually got the Bruins, but I managed to persuade her there was a new kid on the block.
Certainly was a new kid. I think, if I remember rightly, within the last year, they've done a sequel to Mickey's Monkey Spunk Powered Moped.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
God, that's
great. If that was in this film, it would be...
Well, I was just thinking that. If you came with Spunkmeyer just pedalling over the horizon, it would be...
So Spunkmeyer is more of a nickname.
Yes.
So what would Spunkmeyer be? Because Meyer in German is...
Big, is it?
Yeah, so yeah. Big Spunk.
Big Spunk, yeah. Come on, Big Spunk. That's the kind of thing that Americans would probably call each other without even being a sexual connotation. It'd be some weird American football thing. Or
I admire your spunk.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Took me ages to feel that. Yeah, so the ship crashes, sadly. And lovely back projection here. I love old-style cinema techniques. Cameron, again, big fan of that around this time. There's lots of it in Terminator where they're just standing in front of a cinema screen that shows the model crashing.
Yeah.
But the way it's shot is beautiful.
Yeah.
So they salvage everything they can from the ship and realise that they're stuck in the compound and no one's going to come and rescue them for 17 days.
Yeah, this is where Paxton shouts, game over, man, game over, which was an ad-lib. And the Marines are just falling apart at this point.
Yeah. Well, there's only what? There's only Hicks, Hudson, Vasquez, Gorman still asleep at this point. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. And little Newt.
And we get the lovely scene where Ripley cleans her.
Yes, that's very nice. And then you have this Ripley and Hicks frisson.
Yeah.
Which annoys me a bit because she is just this magnificent goddess. And he gets a laugh from... something very pedestrian. What's it about? Doesn't mean we're engaged when he gives her the locate. I mean, he's got to work harder than that, I think.
I think it's quite charming.
I know, but rippers at this stage of her.
I know, but she's surrounded by ultra
she can get,
uber males, and he's the nice.
Land of the blind sort of thing.
Exactly. He's the only one that's mildly sensitive, isn't he?
Bernard Manning in that combo.
But you also get the line here of Newt saying, we better go back inside. They mostly come at night.
I know.
Mostly. Nice.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful South Park episode where they copy that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where he's getting babysat by a girl.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
Yeah, Hicks gives Ripley the thing where he can find her, and she takes Newt to bed.
Yeah.
Not in a My Two Dad sense. And she does, of course, she's scared about sleeping in that room by herself. She tells her, don't worry, you'll be fine. And there's that lovely moment about, don't worry, Casey doesn't have bad dreams. Casey's her doll's head.
Yeah.
She says, Casey's just a piece of plastic. Yeah. It's just really, really well-written scene.
It's brilliant. Like, the performances are just incredible. It's such a lovely... You just buy it. You really buy that. From very early on, actually, you buy that Ripley-Newt relationship, don't you? Even from when she's looking for her. That sort of panic on Ripley's face. It's hypnotic.
But basically, she's figured out that Burke's a baddie. She says, I know you sent the colonists there. And he says, I know, it was a bad call, Ripley. It's great. And she says, well, I'm going to make sure they nail you to the wall for this. He even offers her, he says, if you keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, get a little piece of the pie.
Yeah, but she won't have it.
No, she's not going to do that.
Oh, we find out the processing tower's got 4 hours till it explodes.
Yeah, they had a little bit of time pressure here.
Yep. And so they say, well, there's one pipe that goes from this facility to a dish where they can cool down the spaceship. But it's going to take 40 minutes to crawl through it.
Yeah.
And Bishop says, I'll go.
I'll have a piece of that. And it's quite tropey, the sort of distrusted native that suddenly comes good.
Yeah.
It's quite a Native American Western
very true
part. And I think the whole film feels very much like a Western. I thought it was interesting, Walter Hill said, and he got story credit on it, but produced it. And he said, every film I've ever made is a Western. In later years, I think that is true.
Very true, especially Last Man Standing.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Mm.
So it is a bit tropey, but again, it's. I think it's just brilliantly acted and well written, and you're ready for him to play that card. I think at this point, Bishop, because he has been hanging about a bit.
He has, and again, looking slightly suspicious. So, but you also get the lovely moment where Hudson's like, "Well, I'm not going down there."
He's such a knob, Hudson, and again, he's just a terrible soldier. This is when he shouts, you can count me out.
That's right.
When they're looking for a volunteer. And again, he's a Marine. He's a professional soldier. He doesn't want to do it. He just wants to josh about.
But then when the funny thing is when Bishop says, I'll do it, Hudson goes, yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
And he does. And this was the scariest
getting
bit for
me. Oh, God, it's horrible.
It's the tightest tunnel you could possibly imagine.
Have you watched Escape at Dannemora?
No.
Oh, well, the Ben Stiller directed the Prison Break American drama thing. It's brilliant.
Is that the one with Patricia Arquette?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard about it.
Benicio, what's his name? Dan Paltino.
Oh, yeah.
And it's absolutely brilliant, but there's a scene where they get out the prison in a tight, like, AC duct type thing, and it's ludicrously tight, and oh my God, it's tough watch, as is this.
It's like those videos you sometimes see of people cave diving.
Yeah.
When they have to go through the tiniest gap and they're not sure if the other side's going to be open or not.
Yeah.
Christ. But it's horrible. And the way it's shot, the camera is really tight on his face and he looks a bit like a vampire. But anyway.
Squirming his way through for 40 minutes. Yeah.
Horrible. So they go back to... So Ripley goes back to her room. She's shown how to use guns by Hicks.
Yeah, this is the flirtation.
Yeah.
And well, more flirtation. And it's... I thought this was a bit much.
But it's a good exposition for later on, though.
Yeah. No, no, it's got purpose to it.
Yeah. It's not an exposition, sorry. It's foreshadowing that she's going to use them later on. So she goes back to her room to get some sleep. And it's quite a nice little moment here because she, Newt's not in bed. She's underneath the bed, which I think is quite nice.
Yeah.
So she gets under there with her. And then,
well,
there's two face huggers in there.
Face huggers pop up.
Burke's put them in there. And he also turns off the camera so they can't see them.
Yeah, but then she sets off the fire alarm and then they come in and Hicks throws himself through the window for no apparent reason. They've just shot it out.
Yeah, because they couldn't break the window and then he gets Hudson to shoot it and then he jumps through.
Yeah, he jumps through a bit, really trying to impress Ripley. A little flourish there, I thought.
He should have jumped through and then done some sort of gun show with his muscles.
But so they get freed and Ripley accuses Burke of... It's relatively complicated. Releasing the face huggers so that they would impregnate her and Newt, which would then allow him to smuggle those embryos past Earth's quarantine, and then he's going to kill the rest of the Marines so no one could contradict it.
Yeah,
sounds crazy, but again, my two dads. I mean, this is this is classic Riser, really.
Yeah, and it's basically what they do in Alien Covenant as well.
Oh, is it? So they've taken that accusation from two and spun it out into.
An Alien Covenant's a prequel as well.
Ugh. Ah, right.
God. Ugh. But yeah, this is the great bit where she tells them, and then Hudson says,
"You're dog meat, pal.
This is so nuts. I mean, listen. Listen to what you're saying. It's paranoid delusion. It's really sad. It's pathetic.
You know, Burke, I don't know which species is worse. You don't see them fucking each other over for a goddamn percentage.
All right, we waste him. No offense.
No! Gotta go back.
But then he's saved by the lack of a bell. All the lights go out.
Yep.
And then again, this is some wonderful Hudson shitting himself moments because Ripley says they must have cut the power. He goes, what do you mean they cut the power? He's Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally just the lights being switched off.
Yeah.
And again, he is a professional Marine.
And they've got infrared, they say earlier. Yeah. Switch to infrared. But basically, this is a scene that, when I was a little kid, terrified me.
Because of the lighting or because of the...
Because of the motion tracking, where they seal up the door and it's like they're 15 metres away, 14, 30.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's like 9 and he's like, that's in the room.
Oh.
And then they're like, well... And then Ripley's like, well, how else could they be getting in? And then they all just look up.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh.
They do a lot of real-time stuff in this film. There's, I think it's a couple of occasions where they say, we've got 16 minutes later, and the screen time is 16 minutes.
Yes.
And I think there's another time, there's another one-minute countdown or something, and it's dead on.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know if they retrospectively ADR'd that based on the edit or something, but it's it's a lovely touch.
I wouldn't surprise me with Cameron.
Yeah.
The way he was in those days. Very, very realistic. But basically they look up, Hicks very bravely goes up and looks through the ceiling tile.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds and hundreds of aliens coming his way from up the ceiling, which they should have thought about, really.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's a low ceiling.
It's a very low ceiling. It's like the one we've got here. All the aliens come through. There's a big shootout. Sadly, we lose Hudson, but he goes out bravely.
Hudson?
Yeah.
He's not dragged away.
He's shooting them all and saying, you want some? Oh, you want some
true.
Too?
He's
you
a
want
bit of
some?
A last stand, isn't it?
And then one comes through the floor and grabs him.
That's true. So it was a bit of bravado later on. But the real bravado, of course. And talk about coming good is Gorman.
Yes. Yeah. Gorman's woken up at this point. Yeah.
He has a bit of a Captain Oates here.
Yeah.
And he sacrifices himself with Vasquez.
Yeah, because she's got acid all over her leg.
Yeah.
And he's run out of bullets. So they fire off a grenade.
What does she say? You always were... It's a bit odd. The last thing he hears is just a last bit of criticism.
Yeah, she always says you were an asshole, Gorman. He was, though.
Yeah, so he's gone.
Yeah, and that explosion sadly causes Newt to fall down an air duct.
Yes.
But luckily, she's wearing her motion tracker. So they go all the way down to tracker, but at that point, she gets snatched by an alien.
She gets snatched by an alien, yeah, and we know that because their little doll's head's bobbing about.
That's a good scene, though, where she's in the water and the alien comes out.
Yeah.
Because they've sort of puppeted the tail as well, so it's swishing around behind it.
Yeah.
It looks quite terrifying. So Ripley is very upset, and they go back to the ship, which Bishop's managed to bring in.
Bishop brings in, she goes back, and she just tools up like a maniac.
Yeah. She basically gets everything they've got left and puts it on, straps the flamethrower to the machine gun with gaffer tape.
Yeah.
And goes down there, because they're going. She goes back to the cooling tower, because that's where Newt's signal's coming from.
She goes down there, and she finds the locator, which has come loose.
Mm.
And maybe, opposing my earlier point, maybe this was the point to install this motif of Newt screaming, because the only reason she finds her is for a little scream here.
There you go. Yeah, because Newt's positioned right by an egg, which opens.
Yes.
And the facehugger just comes crawling out.
And that causes her to scream, and then she steams in with the flamethrower. And the flamethrower is so cool.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
That little pilot light aspect to it, where it's just always flickering at the end.
I love this scene. The reason I love this scene is because she comes in, flamethrowers loads of stuff, grabs Newt, turns around, and the camera stops. Because behind there's all this flashing, there's alerts, there's this warning that there's plates, because the facility is going to blow up. And it stops dead, and she turns around with it.
So slowly.
Yeah, like she comes around to look at the camera, and then there's up, the queen alien. Yeah,
and then follows the body up, and
yeah,
and it's just girls' night out gone wrong.
Yeah, there's this massive, first we see this massive kind of bowel-like egg trail, and it's just plopping out eggs. And then we just see this huge queen alien, which is, again, like I said, it's beautifully designed.
Yeah.
Bit leggy. Leggy blonde.
Yeah.
And she has this unwritten contract with the alien.
It's an odd. I was trying to work out the storytelling here. So it feels like the queen alien does a little call-in of some of the other aliens.
She calls in her drones.
Ripley offs them.
Yeah.
Then the queen alien almost thinks better of it, looks at Ripley and Newt, and sort of almost lets them go.
Yeah.
And then when Ripley's leaving, she's like, well, I can't leave these eggs.
Well, no, as they're leaving, one of the eggs starts opening.
That's right.
And she turns around at the queen and gives her a look like, you wanker. And then flamethrowers it.
But what did she think was going to happen with those eggs?
I think maybe she thought the queen was just going to let them go.
Oh, right, I see.
I think she's saying to the queen, you've made this egg open to attack us.
I wondered if, it's a little bit open to the interpretation.
Yeah.
I wondered, although this is quite dark from Ripley's thought of, is the queen actually saying you can go? And Ripley's considering going, but then really when the egg starts to open, it sinks in. God, these are all going to open. And yes, I could go and save myself, but all these other aliens are going to keep.
But then the facility's about to explode, isn't it?
So she could have just gone anyway.
She could have gone because it would have a huge nuclear explosion was going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's the unwritten contract of trust that the queen has broken. So to retaliate, she fires grenades into the eggs, into the queen's egg sac.
Into the queen's egg sac.
And yeah.
And then sort of continues up, and it's just a general.
You get a bit of lift.
Yeah.
Lift panic.
Yeah.
While the queen follows them. Really well puppeted, though.
Yes. It's,
as it follows them.
Yeah, it holds up. Everything about it holds up so well. You're scary when you're supposed to be scared, and you're impressed when you're supposed to be impressed. It's just such a brilliant film.
And it's got one of the best trick endings ever as well, because she gets back to the ship and they get away.
They get away, and then it's Glenn Close coming out the bath.
Yeah. But in an incredible way. I can still remember when I first saw this, Bishop's my friend now and everything's good. And then you just suddenly get that drop of acid. And suddenly the tail goes right through his chest.
Yeah.
And then the queen picks him up and rips him in half. And then he becomes quite funny.
He becomes a little bit slapsticky.
He does.
He's rolling about in his tum-tum, isn't he?
He's like a little baby. I quite enjoy that all the time, especially when the airlock opens and he's like, ooh, a bit like Harold Lloyd.
Yeah.
Harold Lloyd, if he was a paraplegic.
Quite dummy-ish. But then he's just sort of stuck back together.
Yeah.
Bishop, isn't he? yeah, them back together, you'll be all right.
He's an Alien 3.
You'll run that off.
Yeah. Presumably they can just, like a Lego piece, just stick new legs on him.
Yeah. So then, last flourish.
Yeah.
Cargo loader, well planned earlier, takes him out. And then they're off skiing, and then it's just off to bed.
Yeah.
Ripley back in her pants. And
well, you get the key, stay away from her, you bitch.
Yeah.
Which I don't like.
No, I thought that was odd. I thought that was a bit aggressive woman-on-woman stuff.
I think that's a... We're in the midst of 80s action.
Yeah.
Hence this podcast. But we're in the midst of 80s action where everything has to be macho.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Alpha.
Yeah.
And that's a very alpha thing to say. Sort of motherly alpha.
Yeah.
But yeah, she fires the alien out of the airlock.
Yes.
And then
Bishop just stops Newt being sucked in. It's a great ending. And the people escape who you'd want to escape.
Yeah.
Question mark over Bishop, but you'll almost definitely be okay. And then nice last stuff with Newt. What was it? Can I dream or something? Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. And then Hicks is all repaired, asleep.
Yeah.
And then they decided at the beginning of Alien 3 to kill off Newt and Hicks.
Oh, don't tell me that. That's just horrific. But anyway.
Completely off screen.
That's pathetic. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to do it.
It's really stupid. Yeah. I mean, it's a good film. I like it for what it is. But if you were looking for, in fact, the director who did District 9, Neil Blomkamp,
yeah,
he was going to do, Ridley Scott cancelled it, but he was going to do a sequel to Aliens.
Right.
A proper one. Because I think if you watch Aliens as a fan and then you watch Alien 3, you'd be a bit like, oh, why have you done that?
Yeah. Oh, it's, anyway, so that's
yep.
Lovely ending to an absolute masterpiece. It's just such a brilliant film.
It is. But now we've reached the point where I'm going to ask you some quickfire questions.
Yep.
You ready?
Yes.
So, Neil.
Yeah.
Who is the best, Arnie or Sly?
I'd say Arnie because I think he's funnier.
Mm.
I think that's indisputable.
It is indisputable.
I'd rather not continue that discussion.
Yep. Okay, number two. What's the best action movie of all time?
I'd say Zulu. You know, and people might not think it's a archetype action movie, but it's
got one
of the longest battle scenes ever put to film, and I think, yeah, that would be it for me.
It is basically one long battle.
Yeah.
You reach a certain point and that's it.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. And again, so much character and drama within it.
But. Yeah. Terrorists have taken over a skyscraper. This isn't news.
Yeah.
You can take three celebrities with you to stop them. Who are you taking up the shard and why?
First would be Paul Dunan, the former Hollyoaks actor.
And father of De Niro.
And it's because of, I'm sure you're aware of the Christmas Lights press in 2007 incident, you know about
No.
this? Let me just, I just brought a little, just to make sure I hadn't imagined this, but I do think about it every Christmas. In 2007, Paul Dunan was axed from a panto role in Preston after, well, let me just explain what happened. He was involved with the turn-on of the Christmas Lights.
Right.
In Preston.
Yeah.
Now, there's been conflicting reports over the years what happened. By his own admittance, he was drunk.
Right.
There's been some suggestions he thought in his inebriated state that he was opening a nightclub. But to cut a long story short, let me just read. This is from the Daily Star.
Yeah.
The former Hollywood star let rip in front of thousands of children at a Christmas light switch-on. Dunan was so abusive, he was hit by an £80 fine by police at the scene. He had to have the microphone snatched out of his hand after yelling, "Come on, make some motherfucking noise." Unluckily for Dunan, his panto producer, Viv Wells, was in the crowd and she fired him from the lead role in Jack and the Beanstalk at the City's Charter Theatre. Viv said, "I was left feeling sick because of what he said in front of an audience of children. It was totally out of the blue. I was completely shocked. We're now searching for a new Jack." Now,
oh my God.
That
New Jack City.
I think about that almost every Christmas, and I've searched and searched for scraps of information, and all I've got is that he very fleetingly, Dunan, referred to an interview and said that he'd been drinking wine, and then I read somewhere else the suggestion it was very the lights were in his eyes, and he thought he was in a nightclub, but he did scream, "Make some motherfucking noise," to a crowd of infant children, and I just think that he's never talked about it publicly, Dunan. But if we went up the skyscraper, high-stakes situation with the terrorists, life or death, and I feel that in a quiet moment, Dunan might open up to me about just the whole incident, what he was thinking,
yeah,
what happened, what he thought he was there for, and why he particularly chose to shout that one-on-one in a bit of downtime in a foxhole or something like this. I just think he might open up. He might not. I might be wrong, in which case I've taken Bolton Ann to fight terrorists, but I might be right, you know, if I'm right.
Because I'd like to ask you, because if many people don't know, you've written a lot of the Urban Myths episodes. Why have you not pitched that?
If only, but I think, I don't know, Paul is so close-lipped about the whole affair. Maybe if he played him, I mean, look, let me speak to Danan about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if he'd be interested, I certainly would.
Tell him to do it for De Niro.
Yeah, well, why else?
Yeah. Can I ask you a question about Urban Myths?
Yes.
Why haven't they done one about the 1989 Brit Awards?
Oh, I don't know. It'd be great. Usage, maybe.
I want to know what happened.
Yeah.
It's one of the life's most lingering mysteries for me.
Yeah. How that came to be.
Yeah.
And the backstage conversations. Yeah, it's great.
Must have been like? You know, had the bit where their auto cue failed and they just basically just stood there staring at the screen for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and they were such a funny, odd couple. And
so weird.
Yeah, you should pitch it. It's a great idea.
I'm not writing it.
All right.
I want you to write it. That's someone decent to write. Oh, so you've got two more people to take up the skyscraper.
Yeah, the Alessi twins, I thought, from Neighbours.
Perfect.
Yeah, because, you know, they're chalk and cheese, John. They always were. And I think having a bit of variance of opinion under that kind of pressure would be handy. I don't want yes men.
No, and one of them was a top businesswoman as well.
She was a top businesswoman.
She was good with the Edie Gower contract.
Yeah, and Home James as well.
Gail, the Edie Gower contract.
So that would be my three. And I'm sure that would be a common response to that question.
I would love to watch the news one day and say a expert is taking out Paul Danan and the Alessi twins from Neighbours to deal with the situation.
Yeah, the people are sick of experts, you know.
It's a true
kind of Brexity solution to the problem.
They are, and everyone loves Paul Danan.
Well, apart from, let me just check, theatre impresario Viv Wells.
Actually, let me tell you about nobody loves Paul Danan. If they did, he'd be on television.
We're not impressed in. But again, let me get to the bottom of it, because there might be an explanation. So let me speak to Paul about it.
Well, we'll have you back next series and we'll hear what happened with Danangate. next question. You can go back in time and stop someone being born. Who is it? And much like Desert Island Discs, I'm giving you Hitler.
Referee Kenny Clark, who refereed the 2008 Scottish League Cup final between Dundee United and Rangers. And he gave a performance of such staggering corruption and ineptitude. I think that, for me, he's put himself in danger of being selected in this kind of scenario. You know, this is not, you cannot blame me for this.
No.
And I think that...
if anything, you're just responding to
I'm responding as anyone could to his performance on that day 11 years ago. And I think it's entirely justified, sadly, in this situation, that for him to be mentioned in the same breath as Hitler. And I wish Hitler had taken the game. You know, he'd been great at awarding corners.
Oh, very good. A hypothetical fistfight takes place between Rocky Balboa and John Matrix from Commando. Who wins?
10 minutes of handbags and then torrid sex.
Okay, I'd definitely watch that. Mm. Like Woman in Love, but...
Better. Yeah.
With muscles instead of paunches. finally, if you had to make your own 80s action movie, what would it be about and who would be the lead?
I ran out of time a bit on the train, but I've got the leads and the title. I don't have a plot. Mm. So the leads are the Proclaimers and the title is Letter Bomb from America.
That is amazing.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the Sunshine and Leith album, when the two of them, it's the backs to the Proclaimers are looking out over Edinburgh. I thought that would be the poster. And Letter Bomb from America.
And they could do the soundtrack, of course.
Do the lot, yeah.
That's brilliant, because you could have totally done that at the height of their fame.
Easily. You'd easily. Get for that, back like, in the early days of the noughties filmmaking.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of another 80s pop star who got a film. Like Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Yeah.
Letter Bomb from America.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? So,
I mean, it just writes itself.
Plot to follow, but yeah, that's where we're at.
Perfect. Well, Neil, thank you so much for coming in. Thank talk about much. Aliens.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me. It was great fun.
Yeah, and next time we're going to do My Two Dads.
My Two Dads and Falling Up on Danan.
Danan, yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
This is me, Nicole Bradford. Cute, huh? This is my dad, and this is my dad. How'd I get two dads? They inherited me.
Congratulations. It's a girl.
Here's the judge who brought us together. She lives in our building.
My building. I own it.
She's going to make sure we're one big happy family with one dad who's down to earth and one dad with his head in the clouds.
I think we're father of the year.
You can count on me. No matter what you do, you can count on me. No matter where you go,
I'm standing by your side. I'll be right behind.
No one loves you more than I do. Put your hand in mine. You can count on me. No matter what you do, you can count on me.
What would happen if you got a comedian in a room, you opened their Amazon account, and you look back at everything they've ever bought on that website? Well, this.
Because I was consuming so much peanut butter, I decided to try and get a powdered version that wasn't as fattening.
Your handwriting can change your life.
I regret this book. I regret this book.
Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that. I do have that on my fridge.
£4 you spent on that.
That's My Mate Bought a Toaster, available now from Great Big Al.